welcome to Steelers.com Live. I'm Missy Matthews, joined by Bob Labriola. Special guest today, Steelers team president Art Rooney II. Art, thanks for joining us. A very special day for all of Steelers Nation, of course, everyone here in the organization.
No, it's an exciting day, and you two are well-dressed. So
we came prepared.
Good to be with you today, that's for sure.
Big announcement this afternoon. You and your father were able to tell us about number 75, of course. Mean Joe Green's number being retired. Just only the second in team history. How did the decision come about?
Well, it's something that we had thought about over the years always had a hesitation about, where do you draw the line? We've been fortunate to have so many great players who probably deserve to have their numbers retired. I think one of the things was that with Joe retiring, and it just seemed like it was the right time. So we met with Joe back on draft weekend and ran it by him, and he was a little taken back. I think he was very surprised, but really, was very honored, and I know he's looking forward to being here on November 2nd.
Yeah, his exact quote was, "I almost fell out of my seat." How did
he
that
was quiet for a minute. I mean, he really, I don't think he knew what to say, and he was definitely very surprised.
You know, you have 9 Hall of Fame players from those teams. Pick Joe Green. To me, it's an obvious choice. Is this the first? What does this mean?
You know, we didn't want to sort of put ourselves in a position of trying to think about what's next, and that was really one of the things that was holding us back, and sort of decided, look, we're just going to make this, one player at a time, one decision at a time, and Joe was obviously the right person to start with from the 70s. So, I really haven't decided whether, we'll go forward from here or not. It's been a long time since we retired a number, and probably will be something that continues to be somewhat rare. But for now, we're just excited about recognizing Joe, and certainly an appropriate person to do it with.
And the official ceremony, as you said, will be on November 2nd at Heinz Field against the Ravens, and you guys let Joe pick the game.
Yeah, I kind of let it up to Joe. Obviously, wanted to make it when it would be convenient for him to come in with his family and things like that. But, it didn't surprise me that he picked the game against the Ravens.
Really the most competitive, maybe one of the most competitive players in your franchise history. Naturally, he would pick the rivalry game.
Naturally, yeah. And so I know he's looking forward to being here for a number of reasons.
Do you have a favorite memory of Joe just from growing up and getting to watch him play?
It's hard to pick one. I mean, obviously, that game early in his career against the Eagles when he picked the ball up and threw it out of the stadium, that was an eye-opener. He had a couple of games against the Houston Oilers where he kind of took over the game. And so it's hard to pick one, but certainly, it's a lot of great memories, and I think it'll be fun over the next few months to relive some of them and bring them back.
All right, Art. Well, thank you so much for taking some time to join us on the show. We'll let you get back to practice. We're going to leave you with some Joe Green highlights, and we'll be right back.
I'm not going to pretend that I'm not emotional. I might get emotional about this. The guys that preceded me handled it very well, so they made it tough for me, but I'm going to give it a go.
Joe Green is a special guy and has been a special person since I've known him. We, of course, went on to have the best football team I think ever played. For sure, the best defense.
The motivation was always Super Bowl.
No one can make you feel more welcome than the Chief. Have a cigar, my boy.
I'm pretty sure I could watch Joe Green highlights all day, every day, 24/7. Labs.
Absolutely. You know, when Art was here, one of the games that he talked about or mentioned as have Joe Green's stellar moments. He said that Joe Green had a couple of really good games against the Houston Oilers, and there was one of them in particular to me in 1972 that really kind of set the course for this franchise. The Steelers still had not won anything yet, and so they went to Houston with a 9-3 record to play the 1-11 Oilers. The team was racked with injuries. Bradshaw, a couple of the other starting defensive linemen, a few of the starting offensive linemen. Larry Brown, who was a tight end who grew into a tackle, had to play flanker because of all the injuries. But in that game, Joe Green had 5 sacks. He blocked a field goal. He forced a fumble and recovered a fumble that set up field goals of 13 and 24 yards by Roy Girella. And the Steelers ended up winning 9-3. Now, if they don't win that game, there is no division championship. There is no home game against the Oilers, or the Oakland Raiders, excuse me. There is no Immaculate Reception. If there's no Immaculate Reception, who even knows how many Lombardi trophies the Steelers won, because they still would have made the playoffs that year, but they would have gone in as a wild card and had to go to Miami to play the undefeated Dolphins in the Orange Bowl. So, you know, it was a time when the team really needed someone to step up at a time when the franchise had never had anyone step up like that. Joe Green did it.
Absolutely. And Steelers chairman Dan Rooney, I think we all know the love that he has for Joe Green and that Joe Green has for Dan Rooney. Dan Rooney picking Joe Green, of course, to introduce him at his induction to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Such a big deal. Here's what chairman Dan Rooney had to say today about retiring number 75.
Joe was actually the cornerstone of the team that, you know, Chuck Knoll came, and the first pick that he really made was Joe. And Joe, the big thing that identified him is that he had a great determination to win. He really pushed everybody in the organization, especially the players, that winning was what we're there for. And there's a lot of different examples and things like that. Joe is a great person, in addition to being a great football player.
Labs, today while practice was going on, maybe not the most exciting part of practice, I snuck up into the stands to try to talk to some fans, talk to them about the retirement of Joe Green's jersey, and I found a guy wearing one of our jerseys. You know, he wanted to look like us on today's show, but I said, you know, why'd you decide to wear that today? He said, funny story, I had 3 in my trunk. I'm driving here from Altoona, and my son goes, hey, Dad, Steelers.com says that, you know, number 75 is being retired. He goes, all right, pulls it out of his trunk, puts it on. He's here. He's like, I'm happy as can be.
The well-apportioned Steelers fan showing up in La Trobe with 3 different Steelers jerseys. You know, one of the other points that Chairman Dan Rooney made about Joe Green was that how he was kind of the leader of that team in the 1970s. And, you know, Myron Cope in his book Double Yoy wrote about the time, you know, this is back in the 70s now, boys and girls, when people still listen to music on stereos. There were no iPods or any of that kind of stuff. So the Steelers in the locker room, they had a stereo. Now, Chuck Knoll's rule was that an hour before you went out for the game, the stereo went off. So it was an hour before they went out for the game, and Jackie Hart, one of the equipment managers, came out and turned off the stereo. Well, Ernie Holmes, who was kind of intimidating, got up and said, and he turned the stereo back on. So Jackie Hart walked back over to it, and he said, you know Chuck's rule, an hour before, stereo goes off. And Ernie Holmes mutters an epithet and says, I want to hear more music, and turns it back on. So now you have a situation where maybe, you know, there's a major distraction in the locker room right before kickoff. Joe Green got up, walked over to the stereo, ripped all the wires out of the back, and threw them into a corner. No more music.
Problem solved.
Problem solved. Yes.
All right. Well, of course, practice is still going on behind us. I think we could do an entire show on Joe Green, but we will get to some news and notes from practice. And, of course, as soon as practice wraps up, Coach Tomlin will be speaking live from the field, and we will bring that to you. But, Labs, another practice in pads, another day without Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, Le'Veon Bell missed another practice today, tight hamstring. You know, I don't really know what to say about it. He had some problems staying on the practice field last year during training camp. He missed the first three games of the regular season with an injury that he sustained in the preseason game when he finally was able to come back before the regular season started. I think that Le'Veon Bell maybe needs to be careful a little bit, because I think he's kind of at a delicate portion of his career. He's still a very young player, and teammates don't like to see guys miss practice when they're out there busting their butts and maybe practicing with tight hamstrings. Now, I'm not saying Le'Veon Bell is dogging it or any of that stuff. And who knows, maybe he wants to practice and he is being held out by the training staff. All of that really, though, I think, you just kind of need to make yourself part of the team a little bit more. And guys in the locker room, they're looking around, they're practicing, you're not. I hope he gets back soon.
Well, and you saw from some of the video logs, he wasn't going through practice, wasn't dressed, but he was doing some stretches today. I know that's not significant, but he at least was taking that step. The other day, he was just standing on the sideline, pretty much doing nothing. So maybe this is that one next step. Trainers are saying, okay, do some stretches, do a little walking, but time will tell, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. And, I'm not saying that, this missed practice time is going to be critical to Le'Veon Bell's performance this season or critical to the Steelers' outcome throughout this season. I'm just saying that, this is a new group, a young team, and Le'Veon Bell is it's kind of going to be one of those go-to people, both on the field and in the locker room. And I think that, for him to and his teammates to really come together and gel in the way that this new group needs to, I would like to see him out on the practice field ASAP.
And I caught up with him before lunch. He wouldn't say if he was going to practice or not today, kind of noncommittal. The other day, he straight out said, I'm sitting out, I'm not participating. But he did say he really missed backs on backers on Monday.
It's pretty tough, especially because you want to go out there and compete. And you obviously want to show, guys what you can do, especially guys who haven't really seen me play. So I want to go out there and improve myself and back some backers. But it was definitely hard to watch. But I did the best I could coaching guys up and trying to get guys better.
I was going to say you were so enthusiastic.
Yeah, most definitely. Because, that's exciting, guys getting passed back on and, seeing guys compete, that's the best thing about football is competing, So I'm definitely excited. I just can't wait to get back out there.
And worth noting, no update on the pup guys, Mike Mitchell and Alvester Alexander. Excuse me, couldn't get that one out. But time will tell. Coach Shulman said they did run the other day. But it was good to see Labs that Ramon Foster rejoining the O-line back with the team after dealing with the sudden loss of his mother.
Yeah, Missy, it's a tragic kind of thing, sudden from what I understand. And Ramon Foster is one of those guys that everybody likes. And, the Steelers like to think of themselves as a brotherhood. They refer to themselves as a brotherhood. And I think that an even stronger group maybe is the group of offensive linemen. It always seems that the offensive linemen on a particular team really kind of bond all the time. So, he's back with his teammates now, I'm sure. They're glad to have him back. And their presence and their interaction, I think, hey, it's not going to make it any better because, it's just awful. But maybe it helps them move on.
Well, and how you said everyone loves Ramon. I know you're talking about the coaches and the players, but I have to tell you, even the media, too, we were up by the cafeteria during the lunchtime interview session. Every single media member either hugged him, shook his hand, made it a point to go up and tell him they were sorry. And I know they probably do that for most people, but everybody went towards
him. That was not
everybody.
Everybody. And a lot of times it's everybody just, their teammates or their guys on their own. No, Ramon Foster, it's everybody.
Well, Ramon said dealing with the loss is tough, but he is glad to be back with his brothers, as you put it well, of the offensive line, and thanks them for their support.
It helps a lot. The support I've had from my teammates has been tremendous. Social media has been great also. It's definitely helped me get through. It's an unexpected, untimely type of thing nobody ever wants to experience so young. And the guys have been great. The coaches, we've missed you. It's not the same with your what you're not here. It's been good to hear that. It definitely makes you feel good about.
You never want to see any of your friends suffer a loss like that, and you know, we all feel for them, and we're all here for them.
And another good sign today at practice, Sean Spence back out there. I know he seemed to be okay with it, as well as Coach Tomlin, after the first day in pads, what some would probably call one of his first true tests, other than playing in actual game labs. And he's back out there today, so knee must be feeling good.
Yeah, the thing with Sean Spence, or an injury, you know, that of that nature that a player is trying to overcome, a lot of times you can get back out on the field for a particular day. But then the question becomes, you know, how does that repaired body part respond to that stress that it's put under during a full practice? And are you able to stack them? Practice, 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 which is what the profession demands. So Sean Spence, the fact that, you know, the first practice in pads, he was, you know, moving around and active, didn't really surprise me, because I thought that that would be the case. What you're kind of concerned about or wanting to find out is, okay, how's he do the next time? Now, is he going to be back out tomorrow? Then after that, what about Friday night? And then will he be able to practice Saturday? These are the kinds of steps that a recovering athlete needs to be able to make in order to get back onto the field on a consistent basis. And so far, so good with Sean Spence.
Spence did admit that, especially putting the pads on Monday, some of the backs on backers, and even the team drills after that, he said very intense, but he said the good thing is everyone had yesterday off.
I think it was helpful for all the guys, though. Everybody's pretty soft on the first day of pads, and just took advantage of it.
So do you feel like you can just go out now, play football, don't have to really worry about it?
Yeah, no doubt. That was my mindset anyway, my focus, which is go and play, and it's going to be what it's going to be.
You've got six straight pounding days now. Are you a little curious how it might react to that?
It is a lot of days, but I'm going to continue my same strategy, take one day at a time, and do all little things.
I don't even think that's just for Spence Labs. Six straight days of practice. It's almost as if they're hoping the game comes sooner, because that's a lot of practice. That's a lot of grinding in a training camp atmosphere, especially when Coach Tomlin is kind of being as intense as he is.
Yeah, you know, to be honest, though, I mean, the stress on the knees and that kind of thing for the players who run a lot, I understand. But, you know, one day was the run test. The next 2 days were padless practices. You know, it's going to get more difficult than that. And
camp is camp.
Camp is camp. I mean, you know, we're here honoring this guy. And when he came, the first day he showed up, there were two padded practices. So, and that's the way it was for the first couple of weeks of a training camp that often lasted a month or more. So, you know.
Just saying. It's
just saying.
You've right. Probably never heard Joe Green come here to St. Vincent College and say, man, this is nothing.
Well, yes, I have.
I think we all have.
Yes, yes.
Well, sticking with Spence, we had a chance to catch up with Lauren Timmons to give his take on how he did on Monday.
Spence did a great job. Made a great job, great tackle on the run fits we had the first period. Rushed pass well, so he looks real healthy. I'm just excited to see him just continue to do well like that in camp. And when we start playing these teams, like in the first like couple preseason games, look for him to make a nice jump.
All right, so Labs, it looks sunny and beautiful here today, but practice might have been tweaked a little bit.
You know, down to the minute. It was about 2:30, maybe 2:45, and there was going to be a decision made on whether to push practice back, because, you know, checking the radar to see when the rains were supposed to come through Latrobe here, that the plan was that if the rain was going to come early, around 3-ish, they would delay the start of practice and then run the whole thing later in the day. If the rain was going to be later than that, they would start on time, maybe try and condense, or then maybe they would have to break. But as it turned out, the rain held off. It sprinkled just a little bit. And, you know, hey, it's about, we needed another nice day. It's been too wet here for the fans, and more importantly for me and you.
Most importantly, absolutely. Yeah. It was a good practice, though. A lot of cheers I especially saw for Marcus Wheaton just making some really nice grabs from Ben Roethlisberger, something that is I was going through the stands trying to interview some fans about Joe Greene, just pretty much raving about him.
Yeah, you know, the competition period today matched from linebackers, outside linebackers, and tight ends in a blocking drill, you know, for control of the edge of the line of scrimmage. And on a separate field, the wide receivers against the cornerbacks were going at each other one-on-one. Now, I was watching more of the wide receivers and the cornerbacks this time. And, you know, as heavily weighted as backs-on-backers is to the linebackers who get a running start at the running backs, that pass drill is weighted for the wide receivers who they got one guy covering them. There's no pass rush. I mean, what are the who can cover a receiver, an NFL receiver, all over the field? And Lance.
Troy.
Well, nah. I think it's impossible. But Lance Moore was. They even ran him in motion, which makes it the guy can't even get his hands on him. But Lance Moore ran in motion. He did a little quick slant. You know, one of those routes you'd run on third and four. And Ben delivered, it almost looked like it was laser guided right here. And Lance Moore made a very nice catch. I think that those two are going to be extremely effective in those kinds of situations. Lance Moore is very difficult to cover, and Ben Roethlisberger is very accurate and has a very strong arm.
Absolutely. I know we've been trying to get to this for a few shows now. We all love Ike, and we know Ike gives tremendous interviews. So here's a little something we like to call Ike being Ike.
Man, I live in Bleed, Pittsburgh. I'm a Yinzer. I'm a Steeler. So, you know, the only thing I don't really do to be a Yinzer is eat Permane Brothers.
Do you come in with a chip on your shoulder?
Man, I always come in with a chip on my shoulder, man. Too bad I ain't leaning. Man, I feel good, man. I feel like a newborn baby. All I need is a pacifier and mama's milk. Nope. That's like a cut. You ain't right. And of course I then we'll be a leader.
But let's go back to practice a little bit more. Some other things that you saw today.
Yeah, during the tackling period, it was inside run, which, you know, is always interesting. LeGarrette Blount, with Le'Veon Bell now practicing, he was the first string running back on the first play of the game, or the period. Nicely blocked along the left side of the Steelers' offensive line. He popped through a hole, made Ryan Shazier miss, and Robert Golden saved the touchdown after about a 10 or 12 yard run. Another nice play was a run by Dree Archer. He got through the line, he ran away from the linebackers, and he stiff-armed Antoine Blake right at the sideline, pushed him to the ground, but Antoine Blake was able to hold on, get him out of bounds. Another Dree Archer run was stuffed by Cam Thomas. On another running play, David DeCastro came out on a pull, buried the outside linebacker, and LeGarrette Blount bounced outside, but scraping from the inside position, Vince Williams made a really nice open field tackle that ended up being about a 2 yard gain. Another play, Steve McClendon at nose tackle drove Cody Wallace. He came off the ball and just pushed Cody Wallace into the backfield so quickly that Bruce Gradkowski, the quarterback, was trying to come out of there. I don't know if it was going to be like a semi-roll or waggle or something, but he tripped over Cody Wallace's foot and fell down. Lawrence Timmons and Jarvis Jones just treated Jordan Hall extremely
Not nice,
yes. And then on an inside reverse to Dree Archer, this was an interesting play to me, and it really could be something that works well for the Steelers. They kind of lined Dree Archer up in the slot, and then the action seemed to be going one way, but they brought him back the other way and handed it off inside. But William Gabe busted in. He was playing on the slot, and he came across really fast, read the play, and got Dree Archer down for a loss. So, you know, the tackling period was pretty interesting, and as Mike Tomlin says, ebb and flow, which means, you know, sometimes the offense does well, sometimes the defense does well, because it is training camp and you are going against yourself.
Battles won on both sides of the ball.
Or
as
lost.
Coach Tomlin likes to say. Well, lost. You win some on both sides,
yes.
There you go. Now, last year, I know, you know, Keon Wilson, there were some guys that I think were underrated, kind of the camp stars. Are you starting to see anybody that you want to throw their name out there yet this year?
No, not really. You know, there's a couple of guys who seem to be interesting, but I just don't see how the numbers are going to work out for them. You know, the Steelers have a couple of interesting running backs, Miguel Masonette, even Torin Poole a little bit, but, you know, I think that their top end is going to be to try to maybe get themselves on videotape for another team, because the Steelers are really stacked there.
Okay, well, Lance Moore obviously dealing with his first training camp under the Pittsburgh Steelers, used to how the New Orleans Saints do it. We had a chance to talk to him just about how this is kind of the Steelers way, and it's kind of blue collar.
You can tell it's definitely a blue collar team. I mean, the guys want to work here. The guys want to work toward a common goal, and that's you know, being able to participate in you know, a championship level caliber play, and you know, that's we have one goal, to win games and to set ourselves up for that tournament late in the season, and you know, this is where it starts.
I kind of like how he kind of put the Steelers way, and you know, that was on the first day. He didn't really get a real feel of the offseason and the team other than the OTAs and minicamp, but I think Lance gets it. I know he lives with Bruce Gradkowski. I know Bruce is the Pittsburgh kid, and he probably helps him, but he seems to understand how we kind of operate.
Yeah, I think that a lot of players on other teams understand how other teams within the league operate. I think, you know, maybe not details, but generally, because the turnover on rosters anymore, the mixing with free agency and stuff, and I just think that there's much more of a chance that a guy is going to know things about some other teams. And one like the Steelers, a traditional team, a team that has been kind of run the same way since 1969, you know, players kind of, they figure it out and maybe talk among themselves a little bit. I think Lance Moore knew about the Steelers before he signed with them, with us, and I would imagine that what he knew about the Steelers helped him to arrive at that decision. I won't say it was the deciding factor or the only factor,
right,
because, you know, money talks, but, you know, the Steelers' reputation precedes the team often.
Well, and also with Lance, I think knowing that they lost a veteran in Jericho Cotri, and they kind of needed somebody to fill that role to be that guy, also probably.
Right, and if you're Lance Moore, I mean, you're going from Drew Brees, and then if you want to go to you know, another team, you're looking at the quarterback is too. Don't think for a minute receivers don't, you know, check the two things maybe on the depth chart. Who is my competition at receiver? Oh, who's the quarterback? Yeah, Roethlisberger. Yeah, okay, I'll go there.
I know that name.
Yeah, I recognize that one. I'll go there.
All right. Okay, Labs. Well, let's kind of go around the AFC North and see some news that's happening there.
What do you expect from them? Let's start with the Bengals, Holly.
I have great expectations for the Cincinnati Bengals. I have great expectations for Andy Dalton to keep winning in Cincinnati. Let's face it, here's a guy that has won at every single level where he's played football. Began his career the first 3 years in Cincinnati, won an average of 10 games in each of those years, and has joined Dan Marino and Peyton Manning as the only quarterback to start their career all three seasons where they've had 20 touchdown passes or more. And arguably, the Cincinnati Bengals have the most talent, at least a talented roster, in the NFL. Now he's got to prove he can win in the postseason. But you know what? Quarterbacks don't necessarily win in the postseason by themselves. It's going to take a complete team effort, and what a talented roster. So my expectations in Cincinnati is for Andy Dalton and that team to finally get over the hump in the postseason.
We know the Bengals definitely have the defense. How about the Steelers, Sean?
You know, the Steelers, I'm trying to figure out how they're going to start this season. You know, they started off last year 2-6, and they bounced back with a 6-2 finishing the season. What's the morale? What's the team like coming into this year? Are they still hanging over the slump? I know they had an upgrade on the backfield. They're getting younger on defense, but what is the team morale coming into this season and trying to bounce back from the season that they had before? It's always nice to finish up the season opposite of how you started, but how are they? What's their mentality like coming in this year's locker room? How are they going to get themselves back in the out that slump? I've been on teams that had terrible starts, and we had to fight our way in November, December to get back to where we wanted to be. So how are they going to come in and improve this year starting the season out?
and the Steelers dominating that division for so many years, not used to being in the position of waiting to see what another team does in order to miss or make the playoffs, and they don't want to be in that position again. How about the Ravens, 2 years removed from the Super Bowl?
I think the expectations are really with two players with the Baltimore Ravens who have really played well, helped them win Super Bowls, and now all eyes will be on Joe Flacco and on Ray Rice. Joe Flacco took a huge step backwards last year, completing only 59% of his passes, 22 interceptions. When they really handed him the keys of this team, we expect to see greater leadership. Only 3.1 yards per carry on the average for Ray Rice. Career low numbers in 2013 for Ray Rice. They ranked 30th in terms of the overall rushing attack. So if he can run it, you know Joe Flacco will play better at the quarterback position. So I think it's going to be really the expectations for both of those guys to improve drastically.
And the good news is that younger defense started playing better towards the end of the year. So maybe they can continue that Baltimore defense tradition. How about the Browns?
You know, have the Browns finally figured it out? Do they have a permanent quarterback situation in Johnny Manziel? I know we're building up the hype, but look at the guys they had before. Brady Quinn, Derek Anderson, Colt McCoy. They haven't, it just seems like they haven't figured it out. And I know the hype is around Johnny Manziel. And now Josh Gordon not being having a target to go through. Can he go out and get it done? Have they figured out a long-term situation there, quarterback? Because that's always seemed the position that they just couldn't figure out. So have they got a more long-term situation, a more permanent situation in Johnny Manziel? That's what they need to figure out. They need a franchise quarterback who's going to be their guy so they can build the team around him, not build everybody else from trying to figure out a quarterback situation.
Labs, you know, Coach Tomlin says he doesn't want to talk about the speed anymore. It's not a marathon. This is football. But we just heard from some experts, and that's all everyone wants to talk about with this defense.
Yeah, because it is a noticeable change, and I think it was something that needed to happen for the Steelers to be able to move forward. You know, Mike Tomlin is in full training camp mode now. Whatever everyone talks about, he minimizes it. If you don't talk about it, he emphasizes it. I mean, I wasn't surprised in the least. Everybody was excited about the electricity down on the field and in the stands for the first day in pads and backs on backers and, you know, the tackling period and all that stuff. Mike Tomlin comes over to the media. Yeah, it's just one day. You know, we did some things okay. We can use this tape to teach. And, you know, typical throw the wet blanket over it because you don't want anyone getting too excited about anything at this point because it's still July. So, you know, that's what really I think what he's saying in terms of the approach that he's taking with the speed thing. But I think when you look at the Steelers, either as we are on a daily basis or, you know, some of the national people who kind of view the Steelers occasionally in the context of the rest of the league, that's the most dramatic difference with this team. I mean, and it is a dramatic difference. I mean, you're changing Mike Mitchell for Ryan Clark and Ryan Shazier for Larry Foote. I mean, that's a significant difference in speed just at those two positions. You know, you have Cam Hayward now instead of Ziggy Hood or Brett Kiesel, depending upon, you know, and that's a significant difference in speed as well. So the addition of speed on the Steelers' defense and how it can help them quit giving up the big plays. Last year, 17 plays of 40 or more yards, 17 of them. That's unheard of for a Dick LeBeau defense. The Steelers need to cut down on the big plays they give up to the offense, increase their own splash plays, and speed, I think, is the one component that gets you to the ball most consistently, whether you're trying to tackle it or intercept it.
Absolutely. And Keith Butler, Coach LeBeau, saying after we drafted Ryan Shazier in the first round, this kid can make a mistake, and he's fast enough that he can pick up and still be there.
Right. Ryan Shazier has that kind of speed. The guy who had it in the most amazing amount of it that I've ever seen was Rod Woodson at cornerback. Rod Woodson, his first few seasons in the NFL, he would gamble sometimes. He would get faked out a little bit sometimes. But, man, he could turn it on and get there and either break up the pass, oftentimes intercept it. So, yes, speed is a something you can't teach, and it's for the other team, it's something that they have to deal with. And it'll be interesting to me to see how long it takes teams to pick up that the Steelers are faster and where they are faster. You know, that could be a critical component in how the first part of the season goes. As Sean Merriman pointed out in that piece there, you know, the Steelers were 2-6 last year. You take yourself out of the playoffs for all intents and purposes. Getting off to a good start with two division games, first two games, that could go a long way towards setting you up for a nice run at a nice record.
Does that mean you would be happy?
If the Steelers went 2-0 or started fast.
Started fast. Let's not get crazy.
Well, hey, 2-0 is realistic, I think.
It is.
I mean, the Browns, I'm hoping it's Johnny Manziel.
I don't think you're the only one.
At Heinz Field on September the 7th. I mean, some of the guys down there with the gold jerseys maybe might be hoping that
just
too.
A little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, going to Baltimore and playing the Ravens on that Thursday night, as lenient as the Ray Rice suspension was, it still keeps him out of the first Steelers game. I don't think they were going to suspend him long enough to keep him out of both Steelers games. So, you know, that's for Roger Goodell and, you know, his disciplinary committee to figure out. Ray Rice will not be there when the Steelers go to Baltimore on Thursday, September 11th. That's a fairly significant component of their offense that they will not have. So, you know, why not? Why not 2-0?
Okay, why not us?
Why not us, exactly.
Well, and I don't even think it's just the defense labs on offense, adding Dree Archer, the fastest guy coming out of the combine this year. Antonio Brown's fast. I think they're kind of getting overlooked a little bit too, and even just running the no huddle, that things are happening faster and you need guys to pick that up, and also fast guys like Dree Archer. You said the interesting ways that we've been seeing him used in training camp. Obviously, we're nowhere near where the playbook's going to be come week one of the regular season, but there is some cool things that can happen with that.
Yeah, the personnel is interesting. There's some intriguing new people that have been added. But the thing to me that really kind of gives me hope is the combination for the offense is the combination of how it performed down the stretch last year during that 6-2 start. I really think the offense was starting to come together in a way where it could end up being a force in the NFL. And the other thing is now it seems that the entire offensive staff is on the same page. It seems that Mike Munchak and Todd Haley both believe a lot of the same things, and that's always extremely helpful when your offensive coordinator and offensive line coach are on the same page. And Ben Roethlisberger.
Lab, speaking of coach, he's coming to the podium right now. Okay. Let's take a listen.
Another good day. Like the energy coming off the off day. Good ebb and flow and presenting them with some challenges, some new things, pitting guys against each other in competitive situations. Not only to test them in that regard from a competitive spirit standpoint, but the ability to execute technique under those circumstances. It's the reality of it. You're not going to win without technique. So we got some guys that have the proper energy and urgency, if you will, but are still growing in technical areas. But that's why we're here. Good day. We'll look at it, grow from it, and move forward and have another good day tomorrow, hopefully. Nothing really new on the injury front. All the guys that are out are continuing to progress, whether it's Alexander or Mike Mitchell or Le'Veon Bell. Blanche Flower has a high ankle. He's looking at least a week. CJ is day-to-day. He's got a chance. And Zumwalt is kind of day-to-day with that groin. Some normal bumps and bruises, but by and large, been pretty good. Hopefully it stays that way. Questions?
Great. All right.
How does Antonio Brown take on more of a
Antonio does what he always does. He works extremely hard. He's extremely focused. More people probably pay attention to what it is that he does. Now, obviously, his position within the group has changed over the years, but Antonio hasn't changed one bit in terms of his approach to the work. Probably got a bigger audience.
Mike, how will you handle the workload with the quarterbacks throughout camp?
You know, we'll play it by ear like we do all the other positions. Obviously, it starts with seven and then flows down from there in terms of his readiness and what he needs. But all of those guys will get plenty of opportunities to show what they're capable of.
Ryan, is here.
He just walks like that.
Mike, you get Ramon Foster back today. That's pretty tough. His mom was pretty young. And how'd he look one day back?
Glad to have Ramon back. Not only is he a solid player and a great person, a leader, does a good job within his group and outside his group. You know, you can just live day by day and We'll surround him with the brotherly love that we have for him and move forward.
Is the offensive line looking good for you?
It's ebb and flow. Like I said the other day, one unit will come out and have a good day, piss the other unit off. They'll come back and win the next one. We'll see what it looks like tomorrow.
Mike, any comment on Joe Green's jersey retirement?
You know, first of all, obviously, everybody knows what he means. But it's one of those few moments where you just glad to be there. You know, I took a step back in that moment and said, man, that's awesome. I can say I was there when we retired Joe's number. That's the stature that man has, not only for this organization, but for football. Tip of the cap to him, obviously.
Do you feel good about the overall competition you have here? Is it better than maybe in the past year?
I'm not comparing it to anything in the past. I feel good about where we are with this group.
Mike, do you wish it was hotter?
I do, but I don't have control over that, so I'm not losing a whole lot of sleep.
Is there anything you can do to compensate? I mean, do you try to run them a little bit longer than you would on a normal day just to try to get some?
Nah, we're going to come out here and do the work and the elements of the elements. We step in the stadiums. We've got no control over that. We take it how it comes. We worry about the variables that we can control, and that's our readiness, our mindset, our execution, et cetera.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
Thank you, guys.
Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin, some nice words about Joe Green, a guy that he had a chance to work alongside whenever Joe was in our scouting department, and somebody that, you know, Coach always wanted to listen to and kind of learn from.
Yeah, Joe Green he's just an iconic figure in the NFL. I mean, Mike Tomlin loves the sport, loves the league, and so he knows who Joe Green is without having anything to do with, you know, being the Steelers coach. Then having an opportunity to work with him when Joe was part of the personnel department here, Mike Tomlin was the coach. You know, you get a little bit behind the curtain, so to speak, and, you know, Joe Green knows what it's about. Joe Green knows one when he sees one in terms of a guy who can play or a guy who cannot. I would imagine talking football with Joe Green is can be a very enlightening experience.
Absolutely. On the injury front, Coach Tomlin did say all the guys like Mike Mitchell and Le'Veon Bell still day-to-day are progressing, but he did say rookie tight end Rob Blanchflower, high ankle sprain. He will be out for at least a week, and we did see him labs on the sideline kind of with a boot on that ankle. So.
Yeah, you know, Rob Blanchflower, a seventh-round draft pick in a fight for a roster spot, probably, you know, you only keep three tight ends. David Paulson is a veteran that he would kind of have to hurdle seemingly to get onto that. You know, when an injury like this to a young guy can be the difference between having a real shot at the 53-man roster or all of a sudden you're working just to get on the practice squad.
Okay. All right. Well, that does it for us here today on Steelers.com Live. Thank you so much for joining us. For Bob, I'm Missy. We'll see you tomorrow at 5 p.m.